We're here with Zago Chotsama for an interview today. He's graciously granted us some time to talk to him. He has an amazing story. We've talked before, but I wanted to get, you know, give everyone a chance to hear this amazing story and everything you've been through. Before we start, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Just a brief overview.
My name is Zago Chotsama. Actually, my name is Zago Strago Chotsama. Originally from Zimbabwe, currently live in Galveston, father of three, a man of strong faith, a man of love for service. I think basically that's more about, briefly about me.
I know all those things to be true. So tell us a little bit about Struggle. I know we've talked about this before, but that's your middle name, and it's also very important to your story. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So Struggle come from my dad being part of the liberation struggle for Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe used to be a British colony. And when they wanted to claim back the land from the British, he was part of the, here they call them the veterans, but he was one of the leaders of the struggle for independence. And he also had to spend a couple of years in prison trying to liberate Zimbabwe. And 1980, Zimbabwe gained independence. And a couple of years after that, I was born. So he was still remembering all the struggle and everything that he went through to liberate the country. And he gave me the name Struggle. A lot of people think I'm struggling in life because of that name. And I've had so many suggestions to change the name, but because of the story behind the name, I feel proud to have the name, and I feel proud to share the story with people.
Right. I mean, that's great. You know, when you told me that originally, I thought it's really cool, actually, because you were the culmination of his reward for the struggle that he'd been through. I don't think you were the struggle. You were the reward for that struggle, but he built into your name a reminder for you and for himself that all of it was worth it, that, you know, his legacy continued forward in you. I want our viewers to get to know you as well as I do. I think your story is one of the most compelling that I've heard, honestly, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So take me back to the beginning. Tell me where you grew up. When did music first show up in your life? Not as entertainment, but as something that was yours.
Well, born in Zimbabwe, in a small town called Chipinge, very small town, in a family of seven from my mom's side, because I come from a polygamous family.
Right.
My dad had four wives, and in total, from all my family, my dad had about 26 kids.
Oh, wow.
So from my mom's side, my mom is second wife, and we had seven of us. So growing up in a family full of people, there was no time in our lives when I lived in a house, a four-bedroomed house, with less than 15 people. We always had 15 plus people growing up. So it was like that, the joy, you know. And we had people with different talents. One of my brothers was really into music. He was in the school choir. He was singing in talent shows. I was just basically following him wherever he was going, and I was watching him, what he was doing, and I was having that, you know, strong passion and love for, oh, this is really good. But I wasn't really into music. I was just following it through, and because we played music a lot in the house, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of music. Then, as I was growing up, my brother could not make it into music. So he decided to pass that on to me, and he started training me, mentoring me into music. And my love for music was not something that I was born with. Like, it was something that was put in me with people who helped and mentored me to become that. So I started seeing music in a different way, loving music, doing music, singing in the choir. I joined the choir, I joined the church choir. Then that's how music started, you know, developing and growing into me.
Oh, that's great. So it was almost like a gift that your brother had passed on to you. That's great. So tell me about the name Zago. What does it mean? Where does it come from? What did it mean to you before music? And what does it mean to you now?
So the name Zago, just like the name Struggle, it also ties back to the whole liberation and independence thing, because Zago means inspiration. So when my dad called me struggle, my grandma was not good in English and pronouncing the name or the English thing. She decided to use the Zimbabwean language name. So he called me Zago. So it's struggle, Zago. So, and it's also the inspiration for the liberation struggle, but they're all involved in that. So it kind of ties into that, but it has become a really big part of my life, especially the name Zago, because just the inspiration that it gives me inspires me to do music, inspires me to do anything that I want to do in life. So I carry that and I always use that in everything that I do.
That's great. So you have two great things built into your name. You have inspiration and then you have the reminder that, you know, your success is built on a foundation of struggle from your family and from your whole nation, really.
Yes.
That's great. You've been called a gospel artist, a pop artist, and a producer. When you're alone making music and nobody's labeling it, what is it? How would you describe, you know, the voice inside you when it comes out naturally?
Good question.
Well, I think the gospel music comes mostly from me having a Christian background and being raised in a Christian background. And most of the songs that I sing ties up to the Christian part is because of my strong faith and what I believe in. But if you really listen to all my songs, it's not just Christian music. Because gospel music, I don't know how other people like to define gospel, but for me, gospel, I'll define it as something that is positive, something that has inspiration in it, something that brings love, you know, that changes people's minds. For me, that's the gospel part. So other people think I'm a Christian music because I include God in some of my songs, but I see myself just as someone who is inspirational, someone who likes to influence or make a difference. So my music is mostly making a difference. Gospel music is all about making a difference. And you ask, how does that in my mind? Again, it's all about just making the difference. So whenever I'm making a song, my thought process is not about, it's not, the first thing is not thinking about God. My thought process, the first thing I'm thinking of, who is gonna listen to this music? What effect or what impact is that music going to have on them? These words I'm using, these words I'm writing, are they going to affect or influence someone's life in a positive way? So that's what comes into my mind. Then sometimes, that's when I put God, if I wanna direct it into a specific audience. And sometimes I don't even include God because I want to direct it into a different audience.
Great. So I would say, you know, just trying for me to understand what you're saying, God is not something you directly include in music as a strategic point. It's something that's just natural. And sometimes it's there and it fits the message you're trying to give. And sometimes it doesn't necessarily, although it's always underlying in everything you do.
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk about your journey and how you got to America. And I know it was a long journey. Parts of it were difficult. Tell me the story of how music brought you to America. You've told me this before, and I think it's great. What was the specific moment, an opportunity, a door that opened? And did you know that when you walked through it, your entire world was about to change?
Wow, this story is... it's a very exciting story for me. And each time I talk about it, it just brings smiles on my face because I remember it exactly as it how it went down. So there was this lady from America, from United States, who was working for the United Methodist Connectional Ministries. And she came to Africa. And when they went to Africa, she was not supposed to come to Zimbabwe. She went to West Africa. And then when she was in West Africa, they wanted someone else to go to Zimbabwe. And one of the people who was supposed to go to Zimbabwe could not make it. Then she was chosen to go. So it was something that was not planned for her to come. And that was also about the right time when I just released our first professional album. Because we used to release albums, but not really professionally. And that was the time we just won a talent competition in Zimbabwe, and we got a recording contract for 10 tracks. And we just released that album a week before the lady came. So whenever anybody or somebody's coming to Africa, especially if they're white and they're coming to Africa, everybody in Africa thinks, oh my goodness, if I talk to this person, all my problems are gonna disappear. So everyone wanted to talk to her. And I was part of the leadership of the youth group in Zimbabwe. And when she came to our church, the church that I went to in Zimbabwe is the biggest United Methodist church in Zimbabwe. So she had to come there. She came for the service. And after the service, she was just meeting people. And like I said, everybody wanna meet. So all the guys in top leadership were the ones like ring fencing her and not allowing anybody else to do that. So we didn't have enough time to go and meet her. But what we did was I took the CD from our just launched album. Then I wrote a note in it. And I specifically said, it was just about six lines, exactly what we wanted to do and what we wanted to achieve with music. So our goal was to, you know, we need to spread the love of music all over the world. We need to have that opportunity. And, you know, we asked her, listen to the album and if you could help us to achieve that dream. So we gave her the CD, and that was in May of 2010. She came back to America. She never opened the CD until November. That's when she was opening the CD, she saw the note. It had my email address. And then quickly she sent an email. Oh, I saw the CD, I listened to the music. We had five songs English, five songs in our language. So she listened to it, she loved it. And she said, I listened to it, it was a cappella music. But she was honest, which is one thing that I love about people from here. And I learned that they are honest. If they can do something, they will let you know. If they cannot, they'll just simply say it. Sometimes back home, if you try to tell people in their face that I cannot do this, it sounds disrespectful. Mm-hmm. So we don't usually do that. We, you know, we'll be like, okay, I'll see what I can do. Right. That's how we do it.
Right.
And if you're from Zimbabwe, you know, it's a no.
Yeah.
But it's a softness, yeah. But she was just direct and say, I don't think I'll be able to bring you guys here. I don't have the resources to do that. But I love your music. And that was it. So for me and my friends, because of our faith, we pray about everything. I started praying. And for me, the fact that she responded was a sign from God saying, oh, there's life there. So something can happen. So we kept praying. And one of the things that I do when we are praying is we call them seeds. We give some seeds, and our seeds is in form of service. So we started offering our time and everything as a service to God, requesting God to grant what we were asking for. Like we want this lady to find opportunities for us. Yeah. So we started helping around the church. We started cleaning the church every day. We started going to other people's houses, the older guys, and cleaning their houses as a service. And every time we're doing that, we're praying about God. And then in December, she wrote back an email and she said, oh, I spoke to one of my pastors about this and he's kind of interested. And he said, let's see what we can do. And then to cut the story short, by January, she had about 12 churches which wanted us to come. And we just wanted at least, if we had 10 churches, we could have a tour. So she had 12. January, February, she had more than 12. March, she had almost 14, 15, 20 churches who wanted us to come. So we had a tour scheduled for us, but we didn't have the resources to come. Like she said, she was talking to all these churches and putting up a schedule, but we still needed to buy air tickets. It cost about 2,200 from Zimbabwe for a single ticket, return ticket. And the average person in Zimbabwe right now, they earn about $100 a month. Doctors sometimes get $400 a month, qualified doctors. So the general population, it could be probably around $5 a day, $2 a day. So there was no way we could get that amount of money to come here. But because of the faith and the sign that we saw, we kept praying about it, and we started having churches from here saying, okay, we'll give you this amount of money to contribute to that. We started having people from Zimbabwe, some of the rich guys from Zimbabwe, who were buying into what we're doing, because we never go out and ask for money, which is one thing that I believe in. We don't go out and ask for things. We offer our services, or I offer my time, or I just, you know. So we started doing that, and people were buying into what we're doing. And before we know it, we had a bank from Zimbabwe and other guys from Zimbabwe giving us money to buy the tickets to come here. And that's how everything went on. And we came to America, to Texas, for a 2.5 weeks tour. And this lady, her name is Stephanie Simmons. When she came to Zimbabwe, like I said, I only managed to meet her for less than 3 minutes. So just handing her the CD. Uh-huh. We never talked. Uh-huh. And she had the faith of bringing us to America without talking to us, without knowing us. So our families at first, they were not buying into that. They're thinking this could be human trafficking.
Right.
But we were so, you know, we knew what we wanted. So we're ready for that. She brought us to America without knowing us. She traveled all the way from Sandia, close to Corpus Christi, to pick us up in Houston. And she came with her husband, and that was the first time we actually get to talk to them and saw them. And the tour was 2.5 weeks, yeah.
That's amazing. What did it feel like stepping off that plane when it was real, when your feet touched the ground and you knew, hey, now we have to go and perform and make the most of this opportunity?
So it was also my first time being on a plane with all the guys, with just six of us. It was our first time ever being on a plane. And for that reason, we were on a big plane, not a small one, a bigger, going on the international tour. It takes about 26 hours in the air from Zimbabwe to here. So it was the first time being in the air for that long. So everything in the air was just fascinating. Oh, this is what happens. This is what goes on. We ate everything on the plane. We kept asking for food. Stepping into Houston, the reality kicked in when we got off the plane. And wow, it was the first time seeing such a developed country, such development, you know, coming from a very small town in a third world country, then stepping in a first world country. It was just, wow, it was mind blowing. I mean, we had to look for Stephanie because she was holding a sign with our names. So we were scared. Okay, what's gonna happen? What if she doesn't show up? What if she's not the person we think she is?
Right.
So all those doubts that our families used to have, it's also started kicking in. So there was excitement, there was fear, there was doubt, but deep down, we still love music. So the moment we stepped down at Houston George Bush, we started singing as a group. So music was one thing that gave us that calming effect. So wherever we're faced with something that we're not sure of, we just start singing. And because it was a cappella, it was easy for us. We didn't need any instrument. We just start singing. So that's when we started seeing people coming to us, oh, where are you from? They're asking us questions. We got out of the plane. We met Stephanie. Finally, when we saw her, I have a couple of pictures I'll share some with you. And it was beautiful. Just seeing her, you know, the love in her eyes and everything was just genuine. And we had a tour. We were supposed to go to drive from Houston, going down to Bryan College Station, to sing at a prison in Bryan College Station for a 2-hour concert, just immediately after landing. So we had jet lag, but we still had to go and sing for 2 hours. So it was all that.
Well, it's an amazing story, you know, just your faith for 6 months, believing. I know that probably had to, maybe in a future interview, we can talk about what that time was like, but 6 months just living off faith and planting seeds of service. That's an amazing story in itself. When you first arrived, was it harder than you expected? And what kept you going during the tour?
Well, it wasn't harder. The reception was so beautiful. I mean, the people were so accommodating, so loving. Our accent was different. They kept asking about our accents, but they believed, I mean, they looked in us, they see we're so young. They looked in the genuineness and everything that we have, the love, you know, the passion that we had. And it made it easy because everyone who was around us made life so easy for us, you know. And I was the oldest in the group. I was also the founder of the group. So I was responsible for everyone around us. So when we went to the church, to Bryan College Station, what kept us going was the moment we went to Bryan College Station and performed in front of those prisoners, you know, the love, they started dancing to all the music that we're doing and everything. And it reminded me, it gave us that passion to keep going because it reminded us that even when you are in such a captivity, even when you're in such a closed space, you can still find some peace through someone else. So that changed our whole mind about what to do in music. That also changed me on how I see life, how I see my music, and where I wanted my music in. So it kind of shaped my music because I was like, okay, people will be in different, you know, bondages. People will be in different, going through so many things. Because when you're in prison, you go through a lot. I mean, when you go back to your cell, there's so much that happens. But just singing to those people, seeing them dancing, it means in that moment, they had to forget about whatever was happening. And they were just in the moment of having fun, singing and loving. So it changed everything about how I see music, that my music should go into people's hearts, should go in people's minds. Whatever they're going through, my music should go in that moment. If it can change something, it should be, if it's 1 minute, whatever, if it's a 3 minute song, it should go and make a difference in whatever situation the person is going.
I love that. I'm an amateur musician. I've done it since I was 3 years old. And I think you're absolutely right. If you look at music that really lasts, it's the things that speak to the human condition and speak to the soul. And they're not about the person who sings the song. They're about the person who's being sung to, and that shared experience and showing people that, you know, no matter our differences, we all go through the same things in life. We all have the same dreams and aspirations, and we all, you know, we all hurt, we all struggle, we all have times of joy, but when we share those things with each other, that's when we're at our best in humanity. And I think that's what music does in a seamless way. It's a lot easier for someone to connect to a song and understand that, you know, hey, I'm not the first person to go through this, and other people have done it.
Done that, yeah.
After everything you've been through, you really could have gone anywhere. You've worked all over the world, Dubai, other places I know. Why Galveston? What is it about the island that made you say, this is where I want to put down roots?
So at first, my wife was the one who was in Galveston. She went to school at UTMB, and then after she started working at UTMB. So when I moved here, in our first tour, we went to Galveston not to perform. We went to Galveston to go to the beach. That was the first time of going to Galveston, and it was so crowded during that time. So we're like, oh, maybe not, you know. But when I came back and my wife was working there and I was living on the island, I really wanted to move to Houston when I came back. Because Houston, fast life, you know, and everything is just, there's a lot of things to do. So I was like, okay. I kept pushing my wife, we need to go to Houston. And I remember I went to a couple interviews, job interviews, because I started marketing in college. So I was like, okay, I was gonna do a marketing job. So I went to interviews, a couple of them. But my wife kept saying, if you move to Houston, it means I have to move from UTMB. And she loved UTMB, so. So then I decided, okay, we are staying in Galveston. And as I started getting into the community of Galveston, that's when my mind changed. My brother visited us to Galveston, and he was like, wow, this is a beautiful place. When he said that, then he started mentioning all the things that he was seeing in Galveston that were beautiful. And all those things were like, oh, I see all these places every day, but not the way you're talking about them. So it gave me, started making me starting to see and find all those beautiful things in Galveston. And the people in Galveston, when I started getting into the community, so loving people. Galveston is just like a family, you know. Everybody there, it seems like we know everyone, we know each other. When I take my kids to soccer, I'm there. There are so many people you meet. We take my kids to VBS, they're there. It's the same people you see in almost everything, you know. So it become like a family, it's a community, it's a family. And volunteering in Galveston in different capacities also helped me to appreciate what Galveston has. You know, the diversity in cultures, diversity in people, the community, the love and everything, and helped me to stay more in Galveston.
That's great. But you didn't just settle here. You got on the board of the Galveston County Youth Soccer. You've started coaching. You work with organizations like CASA. You were a finalist for Citizen of the Year. That's not really someone who is passing through. That's somebody who really has connected deeply. What drives you to put yourself, to pour yourself into the community like you do? Is this a continuation of planting seeds, the same thing that you've always done?
I think I would tie it with that, put it that way. Like I've always wanted, one of the things that I always wanted to do in my life is to give back. And I always find for ways that I can give back. Like I said, with music, sometimes with the little that we get, we could go and help pay fees for people who were less disadvantaged than we were. So that has been something that I always wanted to do. If I don't have finances or something to do it, I always create my time. Because time is one thing that I control. It's one thing that I know I can control. So some other factors, I'm not in control of them. I mean, but with time, I can control what I'm gonna do with my time. So I always want to control my time and give back whenever I can. So that's how I find myself on CASA, volunteering. I've started CASA 2019. I've been there so many cases and seeing those kids being adopted. I have two kids who were adopted through the process that I was advocating for. It just gave me that peace and purpose in life. And working with the Galveston County Youth Soccer as a board member for coaching and development, and also as a head coach and a trainer, and seeing how those kids, you change their lives, and not just soccer, but you started putting all these other pieces into place to help them shape their lives. It's been something that I wanted to do, so.
Great. So coaching soccer and volunteering for CASA, producing music, they seem like completely different worlds, but I know you well enough to know that they're connected by a thread. What is it that you feel connects those things?
I would say what connects those things are, one, people. Yeah, definitely. The people there and trying to make a difference in people's lives. If it's in music, my music, like I said, is mostly about making a difference and influencing people. When I'm coaching, I'm trying to make a difference. I'm not just coaching a soccer skill. I'm trying to transform that child's life to see the world in a different view. Most of the kids here, they travel, some of them to Europe, the kids that I coach, but they don't travel as much as I've done. I've been almost every continent right now. And so whenever I'm coaching, I'm doing something, I see myself as someone who's going to bring like the world to people and say, hey, look at this, I've been here, this is what the world is. There's more than what you guys know. So that's one thing that connects it. If it's music, it's like, hey, I'm singing music in Shona. It's more than what you're doing. This year I wanna release 6 albums. I've been working on 6 albums. I've almost completed 5 of them. One of the albums is gonna be 6 songs in Swahili. I don't speak Swahili. Swahili is from West Africa and East Africa. I come from the southern part of Africa. For me to go to a West African country takes me about 8 hours of flight. I don't speak Swahili, but I wanted to be in the culture of Swahili. I wanted to make a difference in people who speak Swahili. So I use a lot of interpreters. artists that I work with in those countries. I write a song in English, I say, translate this song into Swahili. Then it takes me some time learning how to pronounce the words and then singing them. So I have 6 songs that I've recorded right now in Swahili, a language that I don't speak. But it's all about making a difference, reaching out to those people who speak Swahili and still sharing what I have. I'm doing songs, I'm doing different genres, I'm doing reggae. For the Swahili songs, it's also in the type of music they play there, because it's different from the music that we play in southern part of Africa. They have a specific brand of music or genre they use. So I'm doing that in that genre to be in their community, to meet them where they are. I'm doing reggae songs and reggae album. I'm doing a strictly gospel album with hymns for people, those folks who like hymns and stuff. I'm doing an album for that. I'm doing an a cappella album, trying to go back to my roots. So with the a cappella album, I'm working with all those artists that I used to work with. Some of them, they just record their voices, then we put them together, we combine. Technology has made it easy for us to record where you are. So I'm using that to still reach out. And it still goes the same thing with my soccer coaching. Some of the kids, they laugh at me when I pronounce some of the words in a different way. Like, coach, that's not how you say it. And I'm always telling them, hey, that's the world. You never see things the same way, you know. And you still understand what I'm saying. And I'm still giving you this knowledge. So it doesn't matter what I'm speaking, how I'm speaking, where I come from. It's just that we can still connect. So that's what I'm trying to do with my music and everything else.
Yeah, that was the word that came to mind for me too, was connection. I feel like you're always trying to connect people in a very selfless way, that you put you put other people ahead of yourself, and in a way that's what's helped you succeed in many ways, which is, I think, an amazing part of your story. Okay, so moving on to your music career, you won Gospel Choice Music Awards Producer of the Year. For people who don't know your production work, what does that award represent about the kind of music that you're building?
So again, going back to music being the gospel, the definition of gospel for me, probably will be different from what other people say. But for me, when I won that, it means a lot. I think that was one of my first awards in music. And winning that was really big for me. It means that what we are doing is being recognized. There are other people who are seeing the work that we're doing, and they are recognizing it, and they're appreciating it. Though when I do music, my purpose is not to get the recognition. But when it comes, we embrace it. We love it when people notice it.
That's great. And it's another way to connect with people and connect them to your music. So you were part of a collaboration with artists from different cultures in Dubai, a song that brought together voices from different cultures and worlds. Can you take me into that experience? How did it come together? What was it like creating that across those cultural lines?
So when I lived in Dubai, and that was the time when they were celebrating the 44 years of probably existence as Dubai. So they wanted to have 44, Dubai is multiracial. So many people come there because of the opportunities. So they wanted to celebrate the people who are there, just like kind of Galveston. We have so many people in the health sector, food and industry, hotel industry, come from so many different parts of the world. That was also like how Dubai is. So we had so many people coming from different parts of the world. And they wanted to celebrate that, having so many people and diversity and everything. And they wanted to use music because they know the power of music, how music can cut across generations, how music can cut across different people. So they wanted to use music. Music and sport, those are the two things that actually cut across anybody else. So they chose to use music. So they were looking for 44 nationalities represented in UAE. So I happened to be one of them, representing Zimbabwe and parts of Africa. So we had 44 people in one room coming up with a song. So there was a producer who came up with the overall structure of how the song was gonna be. Mm-hmm. So he wanted now 44 people to bounce ideas on how do we come up with something that can represent Dubai and celebrate Dubai. So everybody would write whatever they have, and they would ask us, we want you to write it in your own language. Exactly how it's going to appeal to the people from your place who are in Dubai. How do they feel we are part of Dubai? We are not outsiders. So I wrote mine in Shona, and I also helped to play the conga drums and some percussion on the songs, and a little bit of help seeing how they were mastering and mixing everything. But so it was like that, and I wrote mine in Shona. It was just a four or five minute song. And they're trying to squeeze 44 languages in 5 minutes. Yeah. So that's the beauty of music, being artists. So they managed to create that. So everybody will get just probably 5 seconds, 10 seconds. You sing a song, you feature, and they were sponsored to do the video by the Dubai government. They did the video, which was big, great production. And everybody was featured in those videos. So it was just good celebrating that. And we also had to go and sing the song with all the nationalities in front of the Dubai leaders, which was beautiful.
That's great. So first I want to say, you know, I really appreciate you sharing this story with us. And I think it means a lot to me. It'll mean a lot to our readers. I want to help them understand you. I've had the benefit of talking to you before a few times, so I have a deeper understanding of who you are. But for our listeners who don't, off the stage, off the field, away from the studio, who is Zaga when nobody's watching? What brings you peace?
Wow.
No pressure.
Well, I would say Zago is a caring guy. Zago is someone with a very big heart. Zago is someone who's ever smiling. I think who is worry-free. I don't worry a lot. I'm a very, very, I love people. I love family. I love my family a lot, not just my immediate family. Most of the people that come into my life, they become family. So my family is very big, and I love getting connected to them. That's basically me. Someone who's caring with a big heart, a giver. I give back a lot. That's me. Besides all this, I'm just a simple guy who's caring.
That's definitely been my experience. I think it's rare to find somebody like that who really wants to just benefit others. And the honest truth about it is, and I'm not as good at it, honestly, as you are, but I try to do the same thing. One of the things we've tried to do with the 1839 is just not try to figure out how to make money off the news or, but just try to tell the stories that we would like for people to hear, because for us, we're not selling a commodity. What we're selling is a community. You know, we're trying to convince people what we've seen about Galveston and people like you. And honestly, those people don't always sell newspapers, even though they could. They don't for whatever reason. People focus on different things. They focus on things that are easily commercial, or they're scandalous, or, you know, they're shocking sometimes. But the real stories about people's lives like yourselves are, to me, more interesting, more compelling, more, they, you know, tell me more about a community and what they really stand for than other stories. And so I hope that we're filling, you know, a niche there. But we rely on people like yourself who are generous with their time, and we appreciate you talking to us. So you've been through things, honestly, that would have broken a lot of people. What do you know now that you wish you'd known when you first started your journey towards this country?
what I know now that I didn't know then. Oh, it's a kind of hard question. Well, for me, I think because things have just been, I've been very fortunate enough to have so many people filling in the pieces for me, for the puzzle of my life, that it's hard for me to say, I wish I would have done this. Like I said, living in the moment and my life being, having so many people helping to go through, I can't really think of what I should have known, because everything has happened just the way it was supposed to happen. People have come into my life at different points and different stages, and I never believed that. I never thought I was gonna be a soccer coach, like getting into that full time. Because right now I'm doing my B soccer coach licensing. It gets to the A. I never thought I was gonna pursue that route. But the for situations and everything, people who shaped that and brought that. So I don't know if I would say there was something that I would have known before, because things have just happened differently.
So maybe the lesson there is just trust the journey.
Trust the process, trust the journey, enjoy it, live in the moment, mm-hmm. embrace whatever comes, mm-hmm. and try to find a positive, even in the darkest places. Mm-hmm. You know, try to find that. If you're in a dark room, your eyes are still wide open. I mean, the fact that they're open, even in a dark room, for me, that's a positive thing. I try to see, okay, I can still see, I'm in the dark. Mm-hmm. You know, this when someone is blind and they're in the dark, they don't see that. So for me, I'm like, okay, I'm in the dark, but I can still see. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes a difference. So I would just say, if people just live in the moment, mm-hmm. embrace it. If everyone in the world would just live in the moment and embrace it, I mean, not ignoring whatever challenges you're facing, but knowing that it's part of life. Things that you can fix, you can. Things that you cannot fix, I mean, just let them be.
Yeah, I would say everybody controls their own narrative in a way. I mean, you decide what something means. Bad things can happen, but it can either be something that sets you back, or it can be something that propels you to do something even greater. I know, looking back on my own life, and I see this in your story too, the times of greatest struggle were the times where I made the most advancement. You know, when I faced a big problem, I found a way around it. And I see that in you too. And I think I feel that connection between your story, although yours is it's so much better. Yours is worthy of a movie. Mine might be, you know, like a Hallmark series or something. But I think it's great that we're able to tell people that story. And I see that you've overcome so much. So that leads me to basically my final question, and then I'll have a closing prompt for you. 10 years from now, when people in Galveston say your name, what do you want them to remember? And what do you, more importantly, what do you want them to feel about your legacy and what you've given?
10 years from now, I know Galveston I've heard they have an anthem, like a song. But 10 years from now, I would want kids or people to be playing music that speaks about Galveston, that talk to Galveston people, that highlights or addresses the challenges, the joys that we have in Galveston. And I want people, when singing to that, they're like, oh, they should find Zago in that, in a song that's talks about celebrate Galveston, that talks about how to face challenges, how to embrace everything you face on the island or in the county. I like people to, when it comes to sport, soccer and everything, I like people to look back and say, hey, our youth soccer started this way. And I want them to remember there were people who were always, you know, giving back and doing this. So I want people to start doing things selflessly. And whenever they think of doing things selflessly, be it CASA, everything else, want them to know you can do that. I mean, and you don't need to have so much on you. You don't need to have so much resources. You just need to have your time. So I want people to start. That's what I would want people to think.
That's great. I love that.
And I hope during that time, like we did in Dubai, I hope we're gonna have so many projects of people coming together, talking about Galveston, like what you guys are doing right now with the 1839, bringing so many people together and talking about what we have on the island, which probably we might not have such platforms to tell people. Like, we have this, we have people who are doing this. Because if I had not get the opportunity to come here and had this interview with you, probably the people who are exposed to soccer, or who are exposed to, who searches for my music, or who are exposed to the places that I go to, were the only ones who could have seen or heard about me. But right now, with the one that you shared before, I've had so many people reaching out to me and saying, oh, we didn't know you do this. We didn't know you also do music. I'm like, yes, I do. You know, you just don't listen. Right. So you shared just a little bit, but I've heard so many people. I think from the time you shared that, I had about more than 50 musicians from Galveston that has friended me on Facebook.
That's great.
And I didn't know some of them existed, but yeah. I haven't met some of them in person. I'm planning on, whenever I had time, I'm planning to go out and start talking. I've only talked to one of them who I want to feature on one of my songs, and she said she can do that. So, but it's an opportunity. You guys came in, you did that, you opened that door. So many people now know I do music. So many people now know I also do this. So. It was just a little bit of it, but it just opened those doors. And
yeah, and that's why we wanted
beautiful.
To do
this more in-depth interview and make sure we got it right, because I feel like your story was inspirational to me. And so the best thing I can do is take that story and try to pass it on to as many other people as I can, because I think you're kind of the embodiment of what I feel like the community spirit, I won't say is, I might say should be. You know, I mean, there are a lot of great people, and there are a lot of people who give. Many of them have a lot to give. You know, like you said, you give your time because that's what you have. And but you and I have also talked about the possibility of I will keep it under wraps what we're working on, but we have an idea for a musical project for Galveston that we think might be cool. So maybe some musicians will hear this and they'll reach out to us and try to find out what we're working on. Reach out to Zago and
hopefully we'll do all this with Thanksgiving concerts at the end of the year, just thanking God for that, you know.
So many exciting things.
Yeah.
All right. So to close this out, so just to wrap everything up, and this is just, you know, your imagination, but paint me a picture. You're on stage, the spotlight is on you. Your voice goes out into a crowd. What does that feel like in your mind after everything you've been through compared to the first time it happened?
It feels like a blessing. It feels that with everything that I've gone through, I feel privileged. I feel very privileged to have had people come into my life and give the same way I try to give back, or even more. I'm so privileged. I've received so many things, so much love. People have given me time, financial resources. People have poured so much. One of my parents from my team that I used to coach, they moved to San Antonio. Before they moved, they bought me a keyboard for music. Something that I wasn't gonna buy. It was out of my budget. They bought it for me, and they said, "We're just giving you this." Just last week, another parent from a different team gave me a camera to live stream my soccer. So all those people are coming through. So when I'm on stage, I'm thinking of how privileged I am and how blessed I am. And I'm thinking, how do I share this? How do I give this back? How do I bless people? How do I give the same privileges to people who doesn't have them? So that's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
That's great. If your younger self, the one who had excitedly put that CD into the hands of a complete stranger, the one who hadn't left home yet, if he could see you today in Galveston, running a label, coaching kids, having won awards, what would he think about your life?
He'll probably think, if he can do it, I can. If Zago can do all this with his background, I can do that. I think that's what they'll be thinking. Like, if this guy can go all this way and do all this, it means I can do it. Because I didn't have all these privileges, I didn't have all these things. Coming from a family of more than 25 people, where we were the last to pay fees in school. I mean, where I went to school without new uniform at all. My mom would do everything, but most of the time it was just, you get a uniform from your brother, goes down the line. Yeah. So they would think probably, we can do it. If this guy do this, we can either do more. Mm-hmm. With the technology and everything available now, we can do more.
That's great, I love that. Well, Zago, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and I ask you some difficult questions today, some tricky questions. You know, I always do that, I'm sorry, but I appreciate your patience. And you know, I think what I'm trying to do is get at that story that I've heard that really honestly touched me so much, and I think it will touch a lot of people. And I think your story is the American story in many ways. It's also, you know, Zimbabwe, Dubai, there's so many things connected in there, Malaysia, but it's the American dream for somebody to come, you know, somebody who comes from a place of struggle, just to tie back into your name, and to come all the way across the world and not only do that and better themselves, but dedicate themselves to inspiring and helping other people every step of the way. It's always been about someone else. You brought your, I noticed in the story, you brought your friends along. You learned music because your brother, you know, couldn't. Like, you everything you've done has been, you, I know you told me you sponsored 50 kids, you know, with the money that you were making here. That's always been a part of your story, is lifting up other people. And I think that is the story that everybody needs to hear right now, is that you can succeed without tearing somebody else down. Yes. That you can make it, you can not only succeed, but you can find happiness, you know, which is not going to be found at the end of any balance sheet. It's something that you have to do because you're doing what you're meant to be doing in the world. You're giving something to other people. There's no balance sheet when it comes to giving. You can give everything that you have to give, and you can still get back even more. So I appreciate that. I think that story, you know, touches me, and I think it's really great that you shared it, and I appreciate you putting up with all my crazy questions and and everything that we've gone through to get this story out there. But I think it's going to be worth it, and I hope that we do your story justice, or at least come close to it. So,
wow, I'd like to thank you guys for inviting me, and thanking you guys for giving me a platform to share my story. It's hard for people to get such platforms, to get stories out there.
Right.
Not just platforms, you have such professional platforms. Because I can put my own music or write on my own Facebook page, but it's different than getting cameras, everything, with people who put thought into it, people who sit down and, you know, prepare professionally. Mm. So I really, really appreciate this opportunity, and I hope you guys will continue to share the light about Galveston, on so many beautiful things that happen on the island. And we hope to see more things from 1839.
I appreciate that.
Yes.
And then I think this is just the beginning of our story together. I think we have more chapters to write. And, you know, we've asked you before to be a 39er, and you graciously accepted that. And we're really looking forward to building more on top of that. We wanted to introduce you to people, but we want people to know that of the 39 people we know in Galveston, you're one of those people that we really feel like is essential to the community and gives us something that we don't have from anyone else. And so that's why we picked you for that. And we really appreciate that you accepted that so graciously. And we'll, you know, like I said, we'll continue to write chapters on our own story as we go. So
thank you.